And gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this edition of the Hagman Report. Doug Hagman, Joe Hagman together. The father-son Mr. Report. Broadcasting proudly on Global Star Radio Network and blog talk radio. Also seen live on YouTube as well. We've got a great program lined up for you tonight. We've got Kevin Shipp. Now, he's going to be joining us at 7:05, 5 minutes into the program. So, you know, if you want to send me an email saying that the introduction is too long, well, you got to understand that
sorry
we
about
have
that.
If you did happen to see a notebook fly across the screen, it was not an optical illusion. That was an actual notebook. As Joe was giving John Robertson. Are you guys done now?
I need it back. But yeah, we're
kind of like Sean Hannity in the football, you know.
And blog talk radio. Stan Deo is going to be joining us first on this Tuesday. Usually he joins us in the third hour each and every Tuesday in hour three with Stan, but he's been gracious enough to come on early because we got a very special guest coming on hour two and three, Mr. Jonathan Kahn. He's a fan favorite, a favorite of this show, and we are so excited to bring him on to hear what he has to say. Now, Stan, there's been so much going on this last week, including the continuation of natural disasters, earthquakes, and many other things. So we're going to get into this with Stan. I'm going to pull up his show images page. Folks, go to standeo.com. There you can reach his show images page on the right-hand side of the microphone underneath the YouTube icon. And each and every week, Stan has so much to talk about, and I'm sure this week is no different, as there has been so much going on. Multiple earthquakes in Mexico, we have solar activity, hurricanes, and much, much more, and the wildfires, and also the early snow that we're seeing in Montana and other mountainous areas, which they say is about 60 days early. All right, that's better. I got my earpiece in now. I can hear, and okay, thanks, Eric. He said, hold on, we're still waiting for Stan. But a lot going on in the news, and we're going to jump right into this. There's some stuff in the media. There's some stuff with the president and the NFL, which is pretty interesting because we've been talking about the NFL a little bit, both on The Daily Show and briefly on this show. There's huge backlash to the number of players that are refusing to stand during the national anthem. Colin Kaepernick was the 49ers quarterback who was very successful in leading the San Francisco 49ers to a number of NFC championship games. Well, at some point, he decided that the violence that was happening against African-American youths and the police oppression of blacks, by making a political statement, he decided to kneel for the games during the national anthem, kind of causing a PR firestorm in the NFL. And it's even gotten so bad now that we have 8-year-old kids in peewee football who are not standing, who are kneeling for the national anthem. And when you think about it like that, it's pretty crazy because, I mean, we're talking about 8-year-old kids making political statements based on somebody they deemed a hero as their football status. This is very troubling stuff as we see this political correct social justice type of activity infecting our society. And it'd be one thing if this movement, this social justice movement, was more like a civil rights movement in the sense that they were fighting for things like equality due to skin color and wages due to skin color or gender. But this is something completely different. This is a political statement, and many of these people who are participating in this have voiced vocal opposition to police, so much so that they've called for their murders. There was a professor who I believe has since been suspended, who was featured on Tucker Carlson last week, who made the statement that he loved to teach future dead cops. The NFL has lost billions of dollars, even hundreds of billions of dollars of ratings, just due to what many say is due to the NFL players kneeling down during the national anthem. And it has been a firestorm. Now, Trump has gotten in on it, and he has been very vocal, saying that the owners should fire these people who are not standing during the national anthem, not showing the proper respect to the flag and to the country that gave them the opportunity to be great players. So we got that going on. Other news, we have Robert Mueller continuing to make news in the publications such as the New York Times and the Washington Post. And now we hear, you know, continue to hear the talks of indictments against Manafort, the unmasking of Trump and his campaign people in Trump Towers through wiretapping, a claim he made back in March or January, I believe, that has since come true. And there's a whole lot of other stuff going on. We have a battle inside the Senate and inside the House. The political divisions in this country are not just along ideological lines among the citizens. It also falls in Washington as well. And whether it's somebody like John McCain intentionally, I believe, paid to disrupt the Obamacare repeal vote, there is a whole lot going on, and it looks like even with Trump being the president, which we all hoped for, that things are getting much, much tougher as far as governing, as this bloated bureaucracy and deep state continue their assault not only on Trump but his supporters and the few media outlets that are left that defend him. It's just amazing, and it seems like each day it gets crazier and crazier, and there is no end in sight. Again, folks, our guest this hour is Mr. Standeo. He's joining us early this Tuesday because we have Mr. Jonathan Kahn coming up from hours 8 to 10, and Stan was gracious enough to switch times so Mr. Kahn could come on with us when he was available. Stan, it's been a very busy week. It's great to have you back on. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, lots of things. Certainly, the political things you were reading in the news brief there are on our mind, as you can see on the homepage where Holly has updated the events on the news page today. Huge number of things. You've already covered the thing with the take a knee type stuff, so I don't need to go over that again. There was something Holly was telling me earlier today about the fires we've had in the United States this year. In 2015, there were 9 million acres of land burned, and that was the worst fire year to that date. This year, we're only three-quarters of the way through the year. In other words, we've got another 3 months to go, and we've already burned, 8.46 million now, and another 3 months, we could burn a lot more if things continue as they are. There are a million acres burning as we speak, a number of them in California. If you look at the earth changes that she's got on our page there, September 26th there, on the left-hand column, those are vicious fires that just sprang up quickly because of the dry conditions there. The wildfires are expected in next month in October to be in California, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and then in November, December, in California, Texas, and Oklahoma. expecting these things to go all the way to the end of the year. And this may be a record year for that. Certainly it's a record year for a hurricane. I stumbled across a little article, which I've got on my Show Images page. If you go to image 42 on the Show Images page, it links you to a National Geographic article, which is entitled "Why This Hurricane Season Is So Active." And they're telling a couple of things there that I find most interesting. I wasn't aware of it, but until I read the article, the two causes that the MIT Atmospheric Physicist Gary Emanuel talks about for the National Geographic article is that the surface winds and all the way up to 10 miles high have little difference in their speed. Now, you may think, well, so what? But if you want to have a tall hurricane, if you have shearing speeds that which increase as you go up, it won't allow the hurricane to grow up and be a big guy, to stretch up the upper atmosphere up to 10 miles high. Well, this is happening, so we are being in the middle of a perfect storm for hurricanes, as far as the atmospheric winds from 10 miles down to the surface being almost the same. And the other thing is the heat in the tropical portion of the Atlantic, around the equatorial region, is extremely high, holding, a lot of thermal potential or thermal energy, which, it's a large thermal mass. And that generates, a flow of air upward over the ocean from that heat. It starts to then hit the Coriolis forces and spin. And, there you have it, a perfect storm from those two factors. So anyway, you can link to that article and see the rest of the article to talk about the fact that El Nino is stuck in neutral, not going either way, which is improving the chances for more Atlantic hurricanes and more violent ones. Now, all right, we've had, two hurricanes hit us, and, of course, the one that's hit Puerto Rico was pretty damaging. But all these things affect the United States. Now we have these fires, another thing that's affecting us. And, of course, for months now we've been having threats from North Korea about nuking the United States or some of our allied countries or territories. When you put those together, you can be pretty much assured that God is kind of letting America go its own way and not shielding it anymore because we've gone away from him. This nuclear business has impressed my team that have been we're in three different locations trying to develop a way to make free energy that's free of EMP attacks so that people can rebuild and have electricity after either a solar EMP or a nuclear one. Solar EMPs are for the most part not as threatening as nuclear ones because in the past I thought that they were about the same, but they're not. The solar EMP basically will cause lightning flashes across power grid and stuff like that, but and along the telegraph type lines they used to have it for the Carrington event, but it won't be doing a lot of the short-term rapid damage to electronics. And so my partner Tim and I, he's over in Kansas, we were talking about this here over the last few weeks, and he said, I've been developing something for us to use on our power system so that it's not going to be destroyed by lightning strikes or EMPs from the sun or from nuclear detonations. So he drove over here last weekend and showed me the device. You can hold it in one hand. It's a lightweight thing, but it is a very, very clever way to protect your home and our antenna for our lightning system, for our power system. Very clever way to protect that. So even if you have a direct lightning strike within about 10 feet of the antenna of the house, all that's going to happen is whatever that lightning hits will get melted, but it won't go in and destroy your electronics if you put one of these gizmos in your circuit breaker box. Now, Holly's put up a note to that on that effect on the home page on the right-hand column under World Events. You'll see a nuclear detonation picture there. And then an article underneath it says, concerns over U.S. grid security rise as North Korea threatens EMP attack. And then she says in there, her note is, in the next several weeks, we will begin offering a complete EMP protection for home and business. Watch for the big announcement on this site. Now, that is true. device, the circuit that Tim has designed is now in production, getting ready for the release in October. It's a professional unit, and it is 5 times more protection, 500% better than the military boxes used, you know, on ships and aircraft and military equipment. And on the military equipment that is protected for EMP, they have what's called a metal oxide varistors, or MOVs. One hit from an EMP will protect you and you, the craft or whatever military device they've got it on. But that one hit will destroy the MOV. It'll fry it. So you've got to put another one in its place, or you don't have any more EMP protection. It's been destroyed. Well, ours that Tim has designed has backup circuits, parallel circuits, and a way to give you maybe 300 hits before it is ineffective. So it's 300 times better than the government, which bombs or burns up on one hit from an EMP. And so while Tim was over, he shared with me a website that is really quite handy for those of us that wanted to know what to do to protect our things from EMP. Certainly, we'll have this available. It'll be, I'm pretty sure, around the $300 mark. And if you're not an electrician, you'll have your local electrician come and wire it into your household panel or just across the 20-amp breaker. That's all that has to be done. And from that time forward, you inside of your house, all your goodies are protected from EMP. I used to think that that cars, for instance, might survive if, you know, they were on these rubber tires and not connected to ground, not in a puddle of water or something. But there's more to it, Ned, on the site that we went to, this futurescience.com. When we went to that site, I found that, wow, the cars really aren't protected. The majority of them, we thought we had to be back in the time before computers on the cars to be safe and have a car that would run after an EMP strike. And this electronic engineer is saying no. And he's been in the business a long time. So he said, for instance, you know, with the cars, they're not big enough to be a long antenna to absorb, you know, and distribute a lot of the EMP pulse, the first one, the EM1, to fry your car electronics. He said most cars will survive this. In fact, I'm just going to read what he said. He says, cars dying, it's a myth. And if you look at my show images page, I'm on the middle picture at the top row, 44. And if you go there, it links you to his site, and all the pictures on that row link to one portion of his site or another, which are important things, preparing for EMP and getting rid of some of the myths that we worried about. Anyway, cars dying, he says. Some say that all vehicles traveling will come to a halt with all modern vehicles damaged because of their use of modern electronics. And he says, and even one movie had a bulk non-electronic part dying. Most likely, there will be some vehicles affected, but probably just a small fraction of them, although this could create traffic jams in large cities. It doesn't destroy the cars. A car does not have very long cabling to act as antennas, and there is some protection from metallic construction. As non-metallic materials are used more and more in the future to decrease weight and fuel efficiency, this advantage may disappear, but the metal cars are pretty much safe. So I found this quite refreshing. I'm not going to have to go out and buy a 1972 antique car to have something to drive after the EMP hits. It won't hit your the wristwatches, you know, if you got them on, there's not a problem. And he, you know, he does give a lot of instruction in that particular link. You can go down through it yourself and see. One thing that I was not aware of is when you have a nuclear EMP, it's got three parts to it. EMP 1, EMP 2, and EMP 3. And they're, when you have like three or four nukes go off, which is possible when you're being attacked, the first nuke over the United States will ionize the upper atmosphere up to the stratosphere, and it's over the line of sight from how high that bomb is. Now, that whole part of the atmosphere is then conductive electrically, and it turns the atmosphere in that zone into an electromagnetic shield. So any more EMP bombs that are launched after that for several minutes to hours or even days will not affect you, because they're going to be hitting that charged electric envelope that the first bomb created. but anyway, so multiple detonations will only generate the first EMP, level 1, 2, and 3. Now, those levels, or those three pulses, the very first one is the one that you got to worry about the most. That's the very fast nuclear EMP component. It's very brief. It happens, I think it starts to rise at about 50 billionths of a second, 50 nanoseconds. And that's what generates these high spikes all over the grid network and into your homes and stuff to damage it. Now, the E1 is then followed by the E2, obviously, and it has a lot of similarities to the first pulse, but it's slower, and it won't create these high voltages in the equipment and the lines connected to it. It's like the pulse you get from lightning. I mean, that causes static on your radio and stuff, but doesn't zap your radio. And that's the second part that follows after the first one. And he discusses that, the timing of it, how many seconds after the initial E1 component, the E2 comes. And E3 is, it's called a solar EMP equipment. It's one that's broad, and it does punch into the atmosphere and create a charge and an effect on the whole magnetic field. But it's, the most it will do is go into the electronics of the AC power grid. You know, like I was saying, there'll be arcs to ground from transformers and lines and stuff like that. But as far as the homes and businesses that are connected to it, there's going to be very little damage if they're using the standard EMP protection. But that's just for the third phase of this. Phase one that I was talking about, the E1, is the one that fries things you're worried about in your house. And Tim has, my partner Tim has got this thing so that it's multiple use. You can put it in your home protecting. He's making one for three-phase businesses as well, which will be ready in the same month, the same week, next month, in about the third week. And because we need it for our energy project, to protect our high-energy converter, this antenna outside, it was something we needed. But he's releasing that first, and we'll have it on sale on our website and on our shopping cart and things like that. And I think, we'll talk to Hagmans and various other people about distributing it to their listeners. And as I understand, it'll even be a promotion where, like the Hagmans could say, okay, this is the unit that costs, $350, but you'll get it for $300 or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what the term. But anyway, these are going to be made available. We can do about 2,000 of them a week. So people that come first get the first out of the manufacturer. Okay, that's enough on nuclear EMPs. That okay. is one of the major things. Sorry, did you have a question?
No, I was just saying, okay, to what you were saying. This is something that we've talked about a little bit on our daily show. About the possibilities of, we were looking at Puerto Rico and the whole island being without power possibly for months, and the need for preparations. And this is another scenario where, if somebody, some nation, people went through this, that preparations would be so important. I mean, the difference between life and death. And it's just amazing to see the weaponry that's been created and the damage that it can do. And when we look at the what it would cost to harden our systems against these kind of threats, it is basically peanuts compared to what the cost would be if we didn't harden the power grid and these other things and something like this happened.
Joe, I can't give you any proof for this, but I suspect that with all the discussion that's been in the internet for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years about EMP threats and the potential for nuclear war, that the government has been quietly hardening the key components of our power infrastructure, the grid. It's not something I'm sure that they would broadcast to the enemies. Let them go ahead and put their high-altitude nuke and try to destroy our grid with the EMPs and be surprised when, we were prepared. The the necessity for that certainly is there, and I'm sure the government has done that in the background to certain things, especially the military things, but it is such an important part, such an obvious part of protecting the country that I'm pretty sure they've done it.
Okay. I was reading about the... we just recently celebrated the anniversary of the Carrington event. I believe it was... 1878, something like that. Where all the wires of the telegraphs were burned. And they estimated today, if that were to happen over the U.S. today, the cost of repair just in the U.S. would be over $2.3 trillion. And when we talk about hardening the power grid for an EMP scenario, it would only cost between $2 and $4 billion if they were to preemptively take care of that.
It may occur. Holly, remember hardening the grid? We thought it was between $2 and $5 billion to harden it, and there was something else. Right. That's not all the lines. It's just the major transformers, and the other amount was, like $50 billion for the rest of it? Yeah. So there's, still, but that compared to trillions, that's
right,
peanuts.
Right. Stan, we're up against the break. We got to take this break. We will be right back after these short messages. Folks, our guest is Stan Deo. Go to standeo.com. Check out the show images page. Each and every time that he's on with us, he puts together some of the finest research and things that he's been looking at, and as well as standeo.com, where Holly curates some of the best news you'll find on the internet. I love checking their site in the morning, and it is a very valuable source. So bookmark standeo.com. We'll be right back with Stan after these short messages. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of End Times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report in segment two with Stan Dale. And no, if you joined us late, you did not join us way too late. Usually Stan's on in hour three, but today, out of his generosity, he moved into hour one so Jonathan Kahn can join us from 8 to 10, and that's going to be a great interview as well. Stan, I'm on your webpage here, and folks, go to standao.com. Check out the show images button right next to the microphone underneath the YouTube icon, and there you can check each and every story with graphics as what Stan's talking about when he comes on the show. We were talking about the EMP threat, Stan, and before the break, do you want to continue there, or would you like to switch gears?
Oh, we can switch gears. I'll finish up what you were saying, I guess, about the Carrington event. That was in 1859, to look it up during the break. I have trouble turning those digits around, thinking 1895, too, but it was 1859. And, of course, they didn't have the electronics that we've got now. But anyway, that was solar and not nuclear. The yeah, let me just push that away here on our show images page. Okay. The volcanoes are becoming active, as I showed through 40 and 41 slides. The volcano Monaro down in Indonesia near Bali is one of the most active in the world. It's not the biggest, but it's one of the most active. And they've been taking people out of there, getting to safety, evacuating them. Indonesia's Mount Agung volcano also is causing people to be evacuated. And if you look at, say, the last week of earthquakes around the planet, and pick, if you go to USGS and limit the value that you want to plot to 5, Richter 5, rather, you'll see that there were 40 earthquakes over Richter 5 around the planet during the last 7 days. And a great, in fact, the majority of them are on the western and southwestern portion of the arc of fire, or the ring of fire around the Pacific, from Japan all the way down to an island south of South Island, New Zealand. That whole area is releasing stress. And I did notice that there was a little bit of an effect, that like a shock wave that seemed to travel across the Pacific, whether it be around the fault lines or straight through, right to where we saw the Richter 7 in Yutla, Mexico, probably 7 days ago. So I'm concerned in this respect that the pent-up seismic pressure does seem to be releasing all at once here. That is good, as long as it doesn't release, you know, one of the big ones like the Juan de Fuca plate up in the northwest coast, or you know, just offshore of the United States. That area there has been busier than I'd like to see it over the last probably month. I'm just going to put that search on and see. Yeah. The corner of the foot of the Juan de Fuca plate, you'll see an outline when you go to look at USGS, and the Juan de Fuca plate is down at the Mendocino Fault, which joins California, in Northern California. And in the left corner of it, there are a ton of little earthquakes showing something is, you know, happening there. Now, we do have a subsea volcano in that area which could be producing those. And there are a bunch of them as well to the right part of that toe of the Juan de Fuca shape that's at the end of the Mendocino Fault where it connects to California. I think that city is something like Eugene or Eureka. Eureka, that's what it is. It's just below Eureka. And as I said, I'm thinking that that might be showing magma movements rather than releasing the Juan de Fuca plate to release the Richter 9 plus that we're expecting. However, I'm sure you guys have been following the various prophecies concerning the judgment of the United States, where there would be two hurricanes back to back, right on top of each other, in essence, as far as cleanup, followed by a third catastrophe of some sort, and you know, a couple of earthquakes, possibly a third one being the big one. But where? Nobody seems to know exactly where. The New Madrid fault line has had a couple of small ones, you know, in the range of about 3 to 2.5 to 3, maybe 4 in the last 30 days. So it's not exceptionally active at the moment, but that New Madrid fault zone is a peculiar thing. It's not really a fault line. It's a fault zone. And if you go back to our show images page and scroll down all the way down to image 5, down almost the second line for our second series from the bottom, and you look at that, and then click on the middle picture in the top row where it says rifts. And that shows you something rather interesting. Those yellow outlines outline the earthquakes that have occurred in the New Madrid region. Again, it is a region rather than a fault line, per se, because it's like vertical crystallized structures that are linked together as though it was made when the United States almost split apart and formed eastern United States as a continent and western as a continent, but it didn't. Now, I've been reading a report, research being done on Lake Michigan, and that it was formed, that toe-like shape it has, it was formed by an ancient asteroid impact. Could have been a comet as well, which left the water behind to make the lakes. But it came to rest right above Chicago, right there at the tip, on the kind of left side of the toe. And these rifts, which are possible areas for, you know, massive earthquakes to occur, come right up and follow a river that doesn't show on the map, but it curves over into the toe of where Chicago is. So when we look at that, I'm just trying to see if I can get the name of that lake. That river is not there. But anyway, the New Madrid has a kind of circuitous path as shown in that rift map up into those smaller yellow box. And it doesn't show, but there's a blue outline of a circle there where it does head off toward Chicago, which if that whole area did convert into a massive earthquake, it could flood Chicago, if not shake the heck out of it, and continue on down the New Madrid and cut across, you know, the southern part of Oklahoma, heading west. So a lot of things could happen if we trigger that area. Just looking here to see if we need to be on that page anymore. If we don't, we'll go back over to image 6 on the show images page. This is something I want to go to the top left image of the United States, which shows water levels. I think I'll take the big one here. Okay, if you click on that map, you'll see, particularly pay attention to the eastern side, the right side of the map. These blue and green areas I generated by taking a height map, a topography map of the United States, and filling the areas that were 200 feet from sea level and those that were above 200 up to 500 feet from sea level. And you can see in this one here, the New Madrid area would suffer greatly in a sea rise of 200 feet or flooding from, you know, a break in that area that was going to be a separation between the east and the west parts of the United States, and go up to the top of it where Missouri is and follow the green, which is a 500-foot differential, going up into Illinois, and you see that little tributary heading off toward the tip of Lake Michigan, toward Chicago. That tells me, looking at that, that this would be a prime weak spot, you know, all along that green and blue down to the Gulf. And reports that people have made where they said, yeah, we saw that there was going to be water emptying from the Great Lakes into the Gulf, could very well happen if that fracture opens up the southern tip of Lake Michigan and it hits these streams that are already there and rivers, goes right down into the Mississippi. So this map tells you, if you live in any of these areas where it's the really blue parts, that you are subject generate water up in a lake, and it would generate water in between the three mesas. If you go back to the main image there, in the image six, if you go back and click onto that, about the Hobie, and then down the second row on the left, Hobie mesas, you'll see the three fingers of the mesas, and I diligently tracked where the water would have to go, how it could be blocked over on the left side by a landslide or some kind of an uplift in the Grand Canyon that would block the flow of the Colorado River and fill up that whole area as a lake and fulfill the Hopi prophecies. Okay, that's enough on that. So, okay.
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 Very interesting.
Yeah, and we've had the September 23rd sign appear, and, you know, as it says, the Lord put the lights in the heavens for, you know, signs and for season. And when Jesus spoke of the time that you would see the Great Tribulation and the time of his coming, whether it be pre-trib, mid, or whatever, that there, you know, there would be a season, you know, that you would know it's a season by seeing these signs. And I think the alignment that occurred on the 23rd of Virgo and Leo and all the, you know, the three planets lined up and all that was kind of God's way to say, this is the season, and you need to be paying attention and getting closer to me. I know a lot of folks were looking forward to something happening on the 23rd, you know, on that date exactly, but as I've said many times, it's a seasonal alert that we are in that season, just like the Star of Bethlehem alerted people to the season of the birth of the Messiah, although they did miss it, except for the Magi. But anyway, did you get anybody who was concerned over that at all?
Well, you know, Stan, the September, I saw so much online about the September 23rd date, and you know how these dates go, on internet forums from Time Bomb 2000 to Free Republic to others. It turned into a date setting rapture fest where so-called Christians said, you know, the rapture's tomorrow, and you know, basically so sure of themselves, short of selling their house and feeding the hungry with the money, with the time they had left.
And did I some think, of them do that?
Well, they didn't sell their house, no, but I mean, they stopped short of that. But I do have a feeling that there are government trolls out there, or bots, that put this kind of information out there on a regular basis on purpose in order to give Christians a bad name. Enough Christians do it to themselves, but just people, at least in my experience, should know better, should learn. How many times have we been through these scenarios with these dates, you know, from the end of the Mayan calendar to the year 2000 to, I mean, we can go on and on and on and on. And we know that, historically and biblically, that, as Jesus says, at a time when we least expect it, he's going to come. And not only that, but he says, you know, don't, you know, we're not to set dates. So I believe that there's a faction of some kind of rogue element out there pretending to be Christians that do it in order just to give Christians a bad name.
Oh, I'm sure that's quite the thing. The thing to remember, though, for people who are looking for the return of the Lord at some time, you know, as I say, pre-trib, at the beginning, in the middle, or whatever, you should not stop looking for his return. That's when people start to say, oh, where's the promise of his coming? I'm going to forget it. We should never do that. We should always be looking up, as generations in the past have done, who are, you know, of course, made up in the grave now. But the point is, if when you least expect it, it's like, you know, here's a date that those people were saying it's got to happen on this date, and it passes, and so people lose faith and fall away like the five foolish virgins. So I just tell people, look, keep looking up every day, pray that you're found worthy when he comes for you, and be on the alert and don't give up. And that's, you know, I think that's good advice.
Oh, absolutely, it's good advice. And if people had the mentality of excuse me, of being ready for a rapture, you know, preparing or a tribulation type event, and they were always in that mindset, these dates should never bother them, because they would always be in that preparedness, spiritually preparedness mindset.
Yeah, I agree. The you know, the whole situation is, as you say, a potential, like we saw in 1988 with Weissman's book, you know, that the rapture would occur in that year at some date. I forget what it was, but, you know, that does serve to weaken the faith and people to leave the belief, and if they have anything, it's not going to be what it should be as far as the faith. You know, they might just be atheists after that. I don't know, but it's definitely planned to break up the Christian community.
Oh, yeah. And they've done a really good job. I mean,
yeah.
People are so skeptical any time. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a date. It could just be, well, an example is these disasters that have happened in a very short span of time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we see this happen, where these, you know, you get the hurricanes, you get the earthquakes, and they're all happening within a few months of each other, then you got the eclipse on top of it. Everybody wants to try to equate these things to Bible prophecy. And not that they're wrong in a sense, but we can't try to fit every event that happens into some kind of Bible prophecy. It will not be self-explanatory, but it will be evident to those who are studying the Word when it is, I mean, when these things are really happening in a prophetic way. And I believe that, you know, sometimes, especially like Hurricane Harvey, for example, I'm not saying that that was a prophetic event, but it is something that hopefully leads Christians to open their eyes and to understand that the times might be getting shorter. Not that it's the end of the world when we have six named hurricanes during a hurricane season, you know, not global warming, but we need to understand the foundations of God from the Scripture. And, you know, he doesn't drop leaflets and flowers and say, hey, things are going to get rough soon. These are the kind of ways that he brings that about.
Yeah, and, you know, you, if you believe in God and the fact that originally we were a nation that was built in the faith of God, the Christian faith, and Jewish people here as well that helped to form the country, then when you see the country straying from the word and from the law that God has laid down that we should try to obey or follow, then when you see bad things happen to this country, you have to at least think, well, this is kind of a judgment. We're not doing the right thing. And it doesn't mean the end of the world, but it certainly means the country, per se, needs to kind of shape up its act, because basically America should have been the light, you know, of God's word to the world, you know, and it has been in the past. But now then it's straying from that, and I think that I would say that the double hurricanes and, you know, the serious ones and perhaps some earthquakes will happen in the near future, a nuclear attack, that these things could all be signs that God's not pleased with us. And, you know, what was it? Paul said to the Thessalonians, I think it was that they said, look, has the rapture come and we've missed it? And he says, no, has the man of sin been revealed yet? That's the Antichrist I'm pretty sure he's talking about. Well, we haven't seen an Antichrist yet. And so, you know, between now and sometime in the future, when the Antichrist will be revealed, the rapture may occur. It's the way I see it. But that might be 3 or 4 years. Who knows?
Yeah. No. I mean, who knows? But at some point, we have to understand. So many people look for natural reasons, like global warming, as an excuse for this kind of increased severe weather. Other people will say it is, you know, God's judgment on a specific people or a country. And if we look at the in the Bible historically, when we see that there have been, you know, calamities and disasters and even wars, that they were a lot of times brought on for a purpose. And it was to teach people a lesson. And if you look at what happened with 9/11, when the towers were brought down and they rebuild the towers, what was the scripture that the then President Obama put on the spire? You know, we will rebuild, we will rebuild stronger. It was in defiance to the Lord. And we see the same kind of attitude when we see these natural disasters. And it just shows that, you know, little has changed. And we continue to be rebellious as a people and as a nation towards God, not recognizing that these, in many cases, are warnings for us to change our ways. But they want to be defiant in the face of God instead of accepting it for what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, people that aren't believers, you know, followers of Yeshua, they will say, okay, it was a coincidence. You know, the tropical heat that I talked about caused these hurricanes. It's just a confluence of very unfortunate natural events. And then there will be another section of the liberal press that would say, well, this is global warming from man efforts or man-made institutions or industrial commerce or whatever. And the real cause of these things, physically speaking, not by God's will, but just by the way that the solar system is organized, is the sun is going through a change in its chemistry. And it's emitting more ultraviolet and different frequencies than it has, as far as we know, in recorded scientific history of it. Now, God uses earthquakes. He uses, like with Moses, when he told him to strike this rock, split it in two, and water will flow out and, you know, give water to the nation of Israel there. There was obviously at some point in time a water aquifer there that was under pressure or an under pressure stream, and when he cracked the rock, it opened it up. And people say, well, that was lucky that Moses found that, but it wasn't. He was directed by God to do that. And, you know, when they walked across the dry part of the Red Sea, you know, the crossing of the Red Sea ahead of the chariots of the Egyptian Pharaoh, when they did that, I found the place where this was most probably occurring from just following the scripture. And there was a very unusual hurricane-type situation there, like a super tornado, that sat on the top of that little circular part at the top of the Suez Canal there, and it forced the water to flow and dry out a path across that very shallow part of the Suez Canal area there. It's where it is, you know, that lake there. And I believe that, you know, I believe that God uses these physical events that He's predestined, He's put them into operation or into position to be used later. And that's why it's so, quote unquote, coincidental, these things happen at the right time, the right people, right place. I don't think this is global warming by man. I think God's got a time clock on the sun, because there's so many things in the book of Revelation that address the sun as part of what's going to be happening in the seals.
No, I understand. And, you know, many people are concerned from what we saw on the 21st of August of the eclipse to the sign we saw yesterday of Revelation 12, or 2 days ago, whenever that was, the 23rd. Like the blood moons. We heard a lot about the tetrad of blood moons before they happened. And we heard about the historical, significance of those blood moons and the further destruction that seemed to follow them. Many people are making the case that, especially after the 23rd came and went, many people who were calling for something to happen on the 23rd are now making the case that, oh, well, you know, it's just like the blood moons. You have to wait a few months. You have to wait, you know, and then it will come. But regardless of what they say, there is definitely a time that we're living in that is very strange, and I believe it is biblical, because there are just so many things going on. Not the hurricanes, not just the earthquakes, but the spiritual increase of attacks that's going on, the Middle East being torn apart by the Arab Spring, the potential peace deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. There are things moving here that 100 years ago you couldn't have all these events happening at once because Israel wasn't a nation. I mean, so much is different now. And it's all, as the Bible said, came about as it would happen. So the time period that we live in now is definitely very special. And it's because for the first time in history, everything is on the table. And everything that the scripture talks about that needs to be there is just about there for these events to start happening the way that the prophecies say. Stan, we're already out of time. I want to thank you again for joining us in the first hour, switching the times that you usually come on. Usually Stan's on in the third hour on Tuesdays, but today he was generous enough to come on in hour one, as Jonathan Kahn will be joining us the next 2 hours. Stan, tell Holly we said hi and thank you, and you guys have a great week.
You bet. Bye-bye now.
God bless you, Stan. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.